Welcome to Musicians Versus the World, the podcast where we explore aspects of music and musician life that may not have been covered in music school. I am your host, Christine Smith. And today we are talking with composer, producer, cellist, and teaching artist, Margaret Maria, about music's power to change the world for the better. With her masterful skills as an extraordinary cellist merging with the intuition of a gifted creator, Margaret Maria is a unique and exciting new voice in the world of new music. Her compositional talents have been described by her colleagues as an unstoppable force of nature, seamless in its complete unification of technical and subconscious realms. A graduate of the Curtis Institute of Music, her performance career has seen her play on concert stages around the globe and in the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra and the National Arts Center Orchestra. She is the co-founder of Orchestra, a social change through music program in Ottawa, Canada. Her later in life transition into composition has seen her work performed on stage in her very first world premiere, Between Worlds, which was premiered in 2019 by the Ottawa Chamber Orchestra, and the album released June 2022 on CMC's Centerdiscs Naxos labels. She has released 14 studio albums, received multiple recording, study abroad, and music creation grants, and her works have been heard on multiple television programs worldwide. So Margaret Maria, thank you so much for being here, and welcome to Musicians Versus the World.
Thank you for having me. This is quite a wonderful space to share some of my work and to be here with you.
I'm so excited. I love it that you're sharing your work with us, because I get so excited when I meet musicians that are constantly trying new things and are branching out, and they are just exploring the world of music through so many different avenues. And you seem to encapsulate this like overall incredible musician. So I'm so happy that you're here to talk with me about you and your life and all of the wonderful projects that you're working on. So I guess we can just kind of start from the beginning. Have you always known that you wanted to be a musician for a career?
I think when I found the cello, I was 12 years old, and it was in a music program. So it was through a school program. And by the time I was 13, I had my first cello lessons, and I said, this is it. I want to be a professional musician. I just fell in love with the instrument. But it was an opportunity that was given to me through a school program. So before that, I had played piano. It was something that I had to do. I wasn't very good at it. But then when I got the cello, it was just love. So love at first sight, literally. And then when I got my chance to play it, I was so blown away by what it was and what it meant to me to be, playing music. And and I knew it really early on, although I didn't know what that entailed or what it incorporated, but I wanted it.
Yeah, you just wanted to be with it. So what is it about the cello that resonated with you so much?
The first one was a visual when I was 12, and I looked across the room and there was this girl playing and she was doing vibrato. And I was like, oh, that's it. So it attracted me visually because I wanted to do that. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, the sound, it's such a, yes. The depth, the warmth, the fact that you could hide behind it. I was very shy for most of my life. You know, I always felt like, at least I could hide. I said, how awful would that be to play the flute where you couldn't hide? And behind the cello, you could just hide and hug it. It was the perfect instrument.
I love that you can hug it. You can hug your instrument. I absolutely love that. So did that love keep going when you realized just how much work it is to master an instrument that's as difficult as the cello is?
I think that with anything that you love, and if you feel like you're able to see progress, so mm-hmm. for me, the progress was really, really quick. So I just kind of had to sit there and hang on to, I think my progress was faster than I could mentally like process even, because sometimes you're going and you're doing things and you're not really fully embodying it. You're just doing it, right? So I had this ability to do things, but I was older, so I was very aware, that I was doing I was able to play and things were coming out and I was able to figure it all out. But I was also aware that, I was just wondering where it was coming from. It was kind of a strange feeling.
Well, and then you ended up at the Curtis Institute of Music. That is incredible. So what was your experience there? Did you feel like it opened a world to you that you never knew? Like, did that change your life at all? Or was it just kind of a continuation of that love that you already had?
I think it was definitely a continuation because, through my I went to the School of the Arts here in Etobicoke in Toronto. So that was only for 3 years. I was 16 by the time I was at U of T for my first year of music. And then I had some setbacks too in the process too. I had tendonitis. I was off for almost a year, you know, but then you come back, you kind of find that this is my path. And so I just kept going. And I did get into Curtis. And at Curtis, people were like, they're fearless. And I think I learned that idea that, you know, you can be fearless too. There was no such thing as difficult music. Everybody just was there to play and share. The level was really high. So that was kind of like a stepping stone for me. And as soon as I did my 2 years there, I got a professional job. So I was in the Vancouver Symphony right away. And then I moved to the National Arts Center Orchestra. So I had this professional career, which was very, very focused on perfectionism and achieving those goals and being really, really focused in and the amount of practice. So yeah, so I did that whole journey. But then I realized, okay, once you've made this journey, what comes next? And for me, it's always the question of what comes next. And I met, Tina Fedeschi, a friend of mine, which is another co-founder, because I co-founded Orchestra, an not-for-profit foundation in Ottawa. And we teach kids from underserved areas, and we give them musical instruments. And I'm one of the conductors, so I conduct the full orchestra, which I love doing. And I guess that goes back to the fact that if I hadn't found the cello in a music program when I was 12, I wouldn't be here today. I wouldn't be a musician. I wouldn't be playing. It was just, it was offered and I saw it and it attracted me. And we need to be able to give those opportunities to kids. And the more and more the world is changing, the kids are getting less and less opportunities like these type of music programs. You know, like I know in Ottawa specifically, there's very few instrumental programs around for kids that are younger. And we want the kids, you know, singing and playing and then getting their instruments around the age of 9, 10, mm-hmm. you know, so that they're playing. And schools don't provide that. It's expensive, first of all. But also, you know, we have teaching artists who are really dedicated. And that also plays a part of it, right?
Okay. So the kids join this program when they're younger. You're saying,
yes,
and they start with singing
when they're younger. Yeah. And uh-huh. then they stay with us until they graduate high school and then come back and mentor with us. So hopefully we never get them, you know, they're all, it's a kind of a family environment. So it's a beautiful sense of belonging and music making.
So what made you decide to start this? I mean, I know that you say that there's that connection because you started in a program, but wanting to give back to the community and then actually starting a program, there is a lot of steps in between there. What was kind of, how did this all come about?
I think playing professionally for so long, you kind of, it's that moment, you know, is this all there is, you know, like, and I loved playing in the orchestra. So I'm searching for more as you keep searching in your life to make some kind of impact. I had two kids myself, and they were really little when orchestra started percolating. We started in 2007. And the idea of giving back, it was just a very powerful sense that I have to. I've always been a teacher as well, teaching cello and teaching students. So this was just a natural way. I have to do something. And it's almost like that internal drive, you know, like the internal drive for me to create music. It just keeps coming. So it's an internal drive for me to create, but also to give back and do something. Yeah. The kids were playing. It's passion over precision, peer-to-peer approach. So it's a different kind of way of communicating with kids. Everyone is an artist, no matter what age you are. So the teachers are called teaching artists. So you're bringing your artistry to one of the highest goals, which is sharing that with others.
Wow. So passion over precision. How that is a very, very different type of teaching style than maybe you are used to, or I'm certainly accustomed to. How, as a teacher and someone who went to such a prestigious art school, how do you switch? Do you ever find yourself kind of going back to the very, very strict sort of teaching, or does that just completely change for you?
I think that we adapt our teaching, I think. I think it becomes okay. a little bit adaptive, that you can adapt really, really high concepts so that kids can understand them at different levels. And yeah. and yes, I think in this program, you have two goals, is to create, you know, musicianship and excellence. But we also have the other goal of the social development program. So gotcha. Sometimes, you know, the excellence of the human being and the human interactions and the caring and the community is just as strong as the musical ones. So I think you have to kind of jump back and forth and straddle those two things. And based on what's in front of you, some kids are, you know, are coming in and they're hungry, or they've had difficulty in school, or they have difficult family situations. So you try to give them what you can give them in that kind of approach. There's a new organization that's out there that's trying to create a common language between all these programs in the world right now. And it's called AIM, and they're Academy of Impact Through Music. And so without being too crazy here, they have five pillars, which every program of this sort exhibits and has. Okay. And if you cover these five things, you are creating social change, or able to create social change through music. And these five things are the holistic development. So if you're incorporating some of that into your program, getting the intrinsic motivation of the child and the kids that are around you. I mean, it works both ways. Optimal agency, getting kids to respond, getting kids to open up and be able to talk and be making choices and responsible for their power, you know, powering them, you know, that they're self-powered. Then you have the community, involving the community. And then the last one, which I think is maybe probably my favorite because I take it to heart, is artistry without limitations. So when you incorporate these five things in a program, you are able to develop something really special. And this is now reverse engineering, because we've been doing this for like 17 years and a lot of programs have been doing it. So now they've distilled these as this is the kind of the pillars that you need to build a community that can be resilient, and the kids are really playing together, and it's very beautiful. And I'm so pleased to be a part of that.
That's amazing. What does a day look like in this sort of a program? So if a child comes from school and then they step foot into orchestra, what do they expect to see? What do they expect to happen when they're there?
Well, so there's always a sign-in and there's snacks, because a lot of kids have come without straight from school, or they may not have had food. So the food bank, the Ottawa Food Bank donates food for the kids. So there are snacks, and at break time, we have the five P's. So we're very, very conscious of that they have their parts, that they're punctual, that they have the pencil, so that there's responsibility, that there's that we have that kind of environment. And it's also such a family type environment. So they'll sign in, every kid is greeted, and then they head to their classes. They will either be singing together, playing an instrument together. They'll do sometimes like semi-private lessons for the children so that they have that involved. And then they play in their groups. And then when they play the full orchestra, hopefully I'm the one at the front conducting. But we've got great teaching artists who are teaching all the specialized classes. So, and the more a kid wants to practice and be a part of it, the more programs they can access. So they can come in twice a week, three times a week. We had to make it work for our kids, which literally are in school till 3 or 3:30.
Mm. How do the kids find you? Or do you find kids? Like how do you get your participants?
Right now we have these big concerts, and the word is always out that we're in the community. And I think it's by word of mouth right now. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, we did little performances in the schools, and the kids were like listened and would come that way. But we haven't had an issue with enrollment. We just keep having more kids than we have room for, but we still try to expand. We're expanding in different neighborhoods as well.
And it sounds like each of these activities are very social, and the kids are never really isolated. There's constant just support and love for these kids, and they have to develop socially as well as musically. I think that's so incredible that you're doing that. So now that's what a student's day is. What is your day like as the co-founder of this?
I do a lot of traveling between Ottawa and Toronto, and So I come in when I, on the days that I do come in for orchestra, it's every other week. I go to Ottawa and I work with my own students, but I'm in orchestra. I just show up and grab my binder, say hi to the kids, and then we just start rehearsing and playing music together.
Oh, that's amazing. That must be just so much fun. what a great opportunity that you've made for yourself there. That's so incredible. So when they're finished with this, what is like the ultimate goal of orchestra?
That the children, first of all, belong. They find a place where music and belonging are the same. Because when I go there, I feel like I belong. You know, it's a place mm-hmm. where I want to be, and I want to be around the kids, and I want to be working with them, because it's like a family. It's like my family. It's like a second family to me. So I feel like I want the kids to also feel that, and they do. The music is brought together, literally kids from all different backgrounds, and we've also tried to take the social structures away. So they've played for the prime minister. They've played for this, you know, the mayor. These kids have been, you know, they play at the Juno Awards. Like, we're trying to create this, a very, very fluid. I like using that word fluid kind of, that the kids don't feel like that. They actually feel comfortable in different rooms. We've changed the social structure that, you know, we have members from the National Arts Center Orchestra come in and play during the concerts. You know, we try to kind of make it that the kids are part of this society, and that their voice matters. And mm-hmm. I think when we're younger and through my generation, you know, it was, your voice doesn't matter. And I think I've been creating music so that I can show what my voice is without actually having to speak. Now I actually have to speak. But the music like speaks for itself. So I guess we want the kids to, you know, all the benefits and skills of playing an instrument. Mm-hmm. But the idea that we're creating an ideal society, or a society which is based on music and peace. And for me, this idea that, and I don't say it lightly, music can change the world. For me, it's a reality. I see it and I believe it so deeply. And I have proof. And I keep telling people, I have proof. Just come look at this. Just watch the kids. Watch what you can do. If you put those five pillars together and you give these kids these type of opportunities, you change their trajectories and you change how they see the world, and it changes how they see their neighbor. And for me, that is like, it means everything to be able to do that and to contribute to that. And I think on a personal level too, you know, the world is such a, you know, such a messy, messy place. But if we did it this way, it would solve so many things. You know, like, how do you blend different people together? And it's okay. You know, I mean, an orchestra is also a representation of the Canadian kind of mosaic, or, you know, where we have a huge, you know, it's like literally mixing everyone together. And then, you know, just let them play music together. Let them find the fact that we are, you know, have this commonality, which is a human need to be together and have a peaceful society, peaceful and loving way of interacting with one another. And there's such a deep respect for one another. We wrote these 10 leading notes. There are regulations, rules and regulations. But the first one is, together we build respect. And the very last one is, excellence is a habit practiced daily. So we're trying to, you know, get all of the ideas of what it means to, you know, and I always want to make the world a better place, either through sharing my music or creating incredible music that, you know, puts out positive energy, or just getting, working with kids and seeing this type of thing flourish while we're bombing each other in other parts of the world, you know, and flourishing here means that we can flourish everywhere if we choose it, right? So it's mm-hmm. there is a way, and I found a way, and I want to raise awareness for that way.
Well, and you have definitely raised so much awareness. Now, you said that you have some graduates that come back and mentor. What sort of, have you heard from them? Like, what sort of impact has this made on their lives?
Yeah, so I just had lunch with one of the cellists who had started right at the beginning of our program. And he came from a refugee camp on the Burmese refugee camp. He came over with his family to like, it was during the winter time too. And a few weeks after his arrival here, he had a cello on his back and he started playing music. He's now, he's about 25 years old and he is doing his master's in a university in the States. And he coaches volleyball and he comes back and he visits us all the time. And he comes back and a lot of these kids also come and bring their instruments and play along in the concerts. So it's like, it's having these kind of, we call them old kids straw because they graduate, they're older and they come back, but they're there and the kids come back and we get to see them and we get to see them either they're mentoring back. And if some of them have gone into music and then they come back, we've got university programs for the kids to come back to mentor with us. So It's a beautiful kind of cycle, which I imagined, okay, let's make this cycle where it's a cycle of belonging. So, and everybody feels comfortable there. So it's, and me, where I feel really uncomfortable in the world, I feel comfortable there. So.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. And it's just a snowball effect. And
yes,
they'll probably go on and pay it forward just like you have. And then before you know it, and that is how music can really change the world. Speaking of which, you are practicing what you preach and you have done a musical collaboration literally about music changing the world. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So I wrote a song called Music Can Change the World with my friend. His name is Trayson and he's a soul reggae singer. And we met at a birthday party last year. And it was like, he said, okay, we should do something together. I'm like, yeah, let's do something together. And that was it, you know. And for me, I'm like kind of I love the synergy of trying to challenge myself into different genres. Because again, I feel I'm genre fluid. So, and I think in this case, I'm always searching for the next sound or something. What can my music sound like? Or what else can I write? Pushing my own sonic boundaries, right?
I hear them singing, sounds of them singing, a melody in harmony. I hear them singing. Music can change the world if we dance and sing together.
We basically just started, you know, I started listening to a lot of reggae music and thinking, okay, what can I do? What can I, like, what would our music sound like? Like, that's interesting right. thing. It's like, what would our music sound like? If you put this together, what is it? And I wanted a little bit of funk and a little bit of soul and a little bit of, you know, so it just started off with a cello bass line and I sung these little lyrics on top and then we produced the song. So it's a bit of a pop soul sound. Uh-huh. And the lyrics are literally, music can change the world. There'll be peace and love around the world. We need music like the flower, the sun. And it's just a beautiful song, which we want people to cover and remix. And a friend of mine in Argentina made a dance mix for it. So we're going to try to release that. So slowly I want to release track after track of Music Can Change the World and watch it move around the world.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So it is just to raise awareness. And then of course, the person who, did the final pop mix for me. Cause I can't really do pop mixes yet. I'm not, you know, I do my own symphonic cellos. I do these multi-tracking cello production things, but I couldn't like get the pop mix. He's actually my Rage Angel co-writer. And he does a lot of pop music and producing pop music, but we've done a whole bunch of electroacoustic tracks, which are licensed on through APM Music. Uh-huh. And those are the ones that you'll hear on WWE Raw and SmackDown. They've used those. So those are the, they're quite high powered and we're working on another album for that. So that's Craig McConnell. So everybody kind of came together through Music Can Change the World. So he mixed and did the final master for free. He said, no, I'm not going to take any money from you. And I said, oh my gosh, thank you. Okay. Trayson and I, we kind of are trying to get this, you know, the fact that we work together on this, it's almost like taking genres and melding them together. You know, he's not from the classical world and I'm not from that world either. And then this summer, we're planning on bringing everybody together to film a music video. Music Can Change the World. Trayson is part of the Human Rights Band here in Toronto. It's like a reggae band, and they'll be touring the States in April. So they tour, and it's a big band of musicians, and they will come and work with our Orchestra Kids to film the music video. And it's almost like everybody that I know is kind of coming together on board to help out, you know, and I think that that's something that means so much to me right now that, you know, and people are like just providing stems. They're doing the remixes. And a friend of mine did a beautiful piano reduction of our score so that the children can learn to sing it. But he's a Dora winning composer, John Roby, and it sounds incredible. He just did a beautiful, like, so people are adding their own little taste to it. And so it's satisfying a bunch of different things in me, which is the fact that I like to hear different things and pushing boundaries. So all these different things are kind of, I'll be doing a few more extra mixes of that. So I get my music production hat on. But then I have to, once the Human Rights do a reggae version of it, because that's what's coming next, then I will create the string parts and some of the parts, like there's horn parts for our kids to play, and mm-hmm. they can play together. So literally, I think my life is about this. It's about trying to find ways to pump as much energy into the world of which is positive and create beauty. Like if I can create the most beautiful music, it will change the trajectory of something, you know, add positive waves. At the very least, that's what it will do. And then on the ground, being able to literally work with kids and work with other artists to affect change over time and to change. I think that's what it's like my purpose lately.
so you're releasing these things and you are encouraging other people to make remixes of this song. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah. Yeah. So on one of my web pages, if you go margaretmariamusic.com, music uh-huh. can change the world. We got stems there. So there's stems and there's sheet music. So yes, people can just upload onto, like, create something and upload it onto YouTube or onto like any of the free social media sites. And yeah. if somebody wants to actually make a cover, just contact me. We'll do something together.
Oh my goodness. How fun is that? And then hopefully again, this will snowball and just grow and kind of spread that message. So are any of your students from Orchestra, are they kind of inspired by your creativity and any of them wanting to turn to composing, and are they? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. During COVID we did kid composers. So I led uh-huh. kid composing workshops with the kids, and the kids were writing music, and we yeah. had our teaching artists perform their music. And one of our students right now is actually writing something that the strings will do. So we're definitely encouraging that. And the other yeah. thing I do, which actually pushes sonic boundaries, is improvisation. Like teaching the kids yeah. just to improvise, but it is free improv. So I have a CD that just came out too, because I do a duo with my friend Bill Gilliam, and it's piano and cello. Mm. And we're called Marbilia. And I've played in public. I've yeah. sat there with no music, and we just go. We just create music on the spot. And I love that. That's kind of the only music I'll play in public.
Really?
Yeah. Well, because most of the time I'm busy producing music or right. teaching. And it is something where I've kind of lost touch a little bit with the idea of performing other people's music, because there's so much stuff that's coming through me. So mm-hmm. I just kind of focus on the things that I... And there's always has to be new music for me. So like I always have to create something new. I'm writing for string quartet, harp, and voice. So that's for next year. I guess maybe the biggest concern for me in this whole thing is, well, it's not really a concern. You know, music for creators comes out like just so strongly. And if it doesn't have a genre, which mine doesn't, it's been a challenge to figure out where to put it. And that's okay, because I think I put it in synergies with other people. I think it finds new creations and it finds new ways of being created. But yes, I'm kind of waiting for that moment. And some supporters of mine said, yeah, just keep doing what you can. They'll find you. And that is like filmmakers who really need a new sound need to come find me. But at the same time, I can't be quiet. I have to say, here I am. And come and listen to what I have. And this is like my own music is like, it's cinematic, it's orchestral, but I play everything in. So I even do some of the percussion stuff and end up getting this, I'm this like composer that wants to really shake everything and turn it on its head. So I'm doing it as a synergy with somebody, let's change it and like make it really intense. And I like hearing my own stuff and other people's stuff. All this music that's being created is different. Like it doesn't sound like anything else. And that's like wonderful, but it's not wonderful when you go down and you're looking for what genre you're gonna release your music on and there is nothing there. You know, it has a classical element, but it isn't fully classical. It has a cinematic element, but it's not really linked to a film yet. You know, it's just music that's coming out. It has to come out. So that's my job, is to bring the music out. And as I go on my journey and, you know, talking to you, finding that my music will find its way where it needs to be.
Let's talk about this Rage Angel. That's the one I want to talk about. Yeah. So tell me about that. That sounds exciting.
Rage Angel is with my friend Craig McConnell. And what we do is we volley tracks back and forth, which is really exciting. And I think we do it mostly from like that internal drive that we want to hear a certain kind of intensity. We know it will be paired because we're writing music for sync licensing specifically, right? So we definitely are, okay, that's the channel, that's where it's going to go. But artistically, we never scrimp. So it's almost like, you know, what gets us going, what kind of is driving it, and trying to find different ways of expressing our intensity, because it is really some of the most intense music that's out there. But it also, because it's electronics and Moog synthesizers, but it also has my cello playing in it. So you hear like cellos, like lots of cellos, but you also hear like the electronic synth production behind it. Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of slick and we just have a great time making it. And it is finding its way into film and TV. And now we're working on our next album. Mm-hmm. We have House on the Hill, Dark Angel. I did another one for APM Music. It's called Heart and Heavenly. That's a cello and different. I have a few different kind of moods on there, a cello mm-hmm. one. And now I'm not sure what our new one's going to be called, but it's in the Rage Angel mode, which is kind of this high impact sound, but it has like that human element. My cello is kind of, make it have that little bit of symphonic or soloistic string sound in there.
Oh my goodness. I love your enthusiasm. I love your curiosity and your just drive to look for something new and look for the good in the world. I admire that so much about you. As we finish up, what last minute piece of advice do you have for aspiring musicians?
I think it is following your dreams. I think that we do a disservice to ourselves when we don't. I think sometimes our dreams are squashed by other people. And that is also something as an artist, you just, again, follow your inner voice, because that's what we're building. And I think the world needs our creativity and that needs everybody to find their own unique voice and to be able to share that. So I think, bind yourself with other artists, give yourself a chance to express things with other artists. Other artists will understand where you're coming from. Do projects together with other artists, and just create the best, most incredible art you can, because that feeds our souls first and foremost. And the world will eventually pay attention, or if it doesn't, well, at least your artistry is making a difference to another artist and to people who are actually needing you in that moment. Right. Because I guess in the moment, I'm just there, you know, if somebody's listening to my music and it helps them a little bit in that moment, gives them a little bit of strength or gives them something, anything, then I feel as an artist that it was worth what I've been dedicating my life to.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Well, Margaret Maria, I have so enjoyed chatting with you. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your so busy schedule to come and chat with me and talk to me about your just amazing life and great projects. And I wish you all the best with everything that you're doing.
Okay. Thank you so much. It was great. And I love the title of your podcast, because I say when I'm coming, Musicians Versus the World, I could, yes, that's me. That's me. I'm going to do this.
Well, you are doing it. You are changing the world. And I love it. So thank you so much.
Thank you too.
Thank you for joining us today on the Musicians Versus the World podcast in our conversation with composer, producer, cellist, and teaching artist Margaret Maria. If you would like to learn more about Margaret, her creative work, her work with orchestra, or if you want to try your own hand at a remix of Music Can Change the World, we'll have links to all of those in our show notes on our website, frostedlens.com/musicians-versus-the-world. Musicians Versus the World is a production of Frosted Lens Entertainment in conjunction with Smith Sound Music. It is hosted by me, Christine Smith, and our producer today is Russ Wilkes. And this episode was edited by our friends at Frosted Lens Entertainment. In today's program, you've heard excerpts from Touching the Infinite, Music Can Change the World, composed and performed by Treyson and Margaret Maria, Marbilia, An Unexpected Insight, performed live from the Array Space by Margaret Maria and Bill Gilliam, and The Blind Shall See from Rage Angel, composed and conducted by Margaret Maria and Craig McConnell. All music was shared here with permission. If you have enjoyed today's podcast, please be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you don't miss out on any future conversations. You can also find a video version of this interview on our Musicians Versus the World YouTube channel. If you have any questions for us, topics you'd like to hear about, or any helpful advice for other musicians that you'd like to share, be sure to reach out on Instagram, Threads, or Facebook, or send us an email at info@frostedlens.com. Thank you so much, as always, for listening, and have a great day.